This is a new dimension in sound.
You're listening to TalkZone.com, Internet Talk Radio.
TalkZone.com.
Pro Football Weekly is on the air.
Then with a play action fake is back to Brooks. And he's going to throw it long down the field. And the pass will be caught by Mike Wallace. Touchdown, 56 yards. The Steelers that quickly have a 7-0 lead over the Browns.
Here is Baker again to punt. Weems stands at the 49. Baker kicks it away. Weems will drift back and play from the 45. Eric to the near side. Slip the first guy. 30, 25, 20. Baker's the last guy that can get in, and he will not. Touchdown, Atlanta. Eric Weems, 55 yards.
This is Wayne Larrabee with the publisher and editor of Pro Football Weekly, Hub Arkish, and the Pro Football Weekly staff. Coming up, our wild card weekend with Jets, Colts, and Packers, Eagles headlining the weekend.
And Wayne, Black Monday was just kind of gray this year, but still lots of head coaching openings. And the way we hear it, we'll tell you who's going where.
It's all just ahead on Pro Football Weekly.
Pro Football Weekly is on the air.
Along with the publisher and editor of Pro Football Weekly, Hub Arkish, this is Wayne Larrabee. Welcome to Pro Football Weekly Wild Card Weekend in the NFL. And we begin with senior editor Mike Wilkening, and a lot going on this first week of the postseason. And let's start in Tennessee, Mike. There was a big power struggle. Bud Adams drafted, wanted Vince Young as part of his organization, the quarterback. Jeff Fisher, the head coach, did not. This was supposed to rub a certain way. I expected Jeff Fisher basically to leave the organization. Jeff Fisher ends up winning this power struggle. Give us the details.
Well, what we know for the time being is that Vince Young is not going to be a Titan in 2011. The team announced that they're going to move on without him. Whether that be trade or release him remains to be seen, but they're not going to have Vince Young as their quarterback anymore, which vaults them into the market in the draft or in free agency or via trade, but they need a starting quarterback. That's a huge void they're going to have to fill. Now, something that Bud Adams pointed out in making the statement that they were going to move on without Vince Young was that the evaluation of Vince Young and Jeff Fisher were separate issues, that he was still evaluating Jeff Fisher. So if Jeff Fisher comes back and indeed is the head coach in 2011, I think at that point we can declare victory for certain. It certainly looks at this point as if Bud Adams might be leaning towards choosing Jeff Fisher. But again, nothing set in stone at this point. Bud Adams made it clear when making the statement on Vince Young that he hadn't quite made the call yet on the coaching staff and Jeff Fisher.
He did, and you have to wonder if that's not just the owner saving face having lost the power struggle, because it would be stunning if Fisher moved on now. You know, you ask yourself, if you're getting rid of Vince Young, who was the third player chosen overall in the first round, and is that rarity amongst NFL quarterbacks, a starter with a winning record, why would you announce we're going to either trade or cut him before you try and trade him and at least get a third, fourth, or fifth round draft pick for him? I mean, you've really killed his trade value now. And to lose both Young and Fisher just doesn't make any sense.
I would agree, Hub. You know, all signs, I think, point to certainly a logical outcome here where Jeff Fisher remains the coach of this team. And you're right. I mean, from a leverage standpoint, the Titans basically surrendered all of that with regards to trade discussions. The most likely outcome would be that he would probably be released at this point. He has 1 year left on his contract. You would think he would get a shot somewhere else, but you would think that the shot in terms of the Titans getting something for him in trade would be pretty slim to nil at this point.
You know, another one of your teams, Mike, very interesting. Mike Holmgren, who's running the football operation at Cleveland now, great head coach, has taken a couple of teams to Super Bowls. All right, he comes out and says, hey, listen, I may coach again someday, who knows, but I'm right now looking for the best coach for the Cleveland Browns. Is he finding somebody better than Mike Holmgren to coach the Cleveland Browns?
Well, he certainly, I think, would be at the top of any list in terms of qualified candidates for the job if he ever vaulted headlong back into the head coaching realm. It does not look like that he wants to do that at this point. Obviously, though, he left the door open just a crack, which, you know, is Mike Holmgren again kind of saying that he's being honest with everybody, that the love of coaching is still in his blood, and you could understand so. He had great success in Green Bay and certainly leading Seattle to the Super Bowl. The credentials and resume are well known, and the skill is well known, too. So, obviously, that's a unique set of circumstances, having a team president with that type of resume conducting a coaching search who hasn't quite completely closed the door yet. But I think at this point, it looks like the preference preference is to hire somebody else and to hire somebody that's going to revamp that offense more likely than not. You know, the primary guys I've looked at to this point, three of the four of the candidates that have been reportedly on the Browns list are offensive minded. I think fixing that offense and in the Holmgren mold, I think, is what they want to do, and most likely somebody other than Mike Holmgren being the head coach.
Well, and Mike, very quickly, offensive minded and off, quote, the Mike Holmgren coaching tree, or
right,
at least with a connection to it, and Marty Morningweg and Pat Shermer are the names we seem to be hearing the most, aren't they?
You're right. Off that Holmgren tree, somebody that's going to put in that so-called West Coast offense more in the mold of Mike Holmgren. I think Holmgren kind of sat back a little bit this year with regards to the offense. I think this year it's going to be more of what we've seen before in Green Bay and Seattle, that type of attack.
All right, thanks very much, Mike. Mike Wilkening, our senior editor. Associate editor Arthur Arkush joins us. And Arthur, down in Jacksonville, a lot of people pretty much assumed that the collapse in the final weeks of the season by the Jacksonville Jaguars would cost Jack Del Rio his job, but not so fast, my friends. Could you explain?
Wayne Weaver was adamant in his press conference saying that Del Rio was being retained not for financial reasons, that the 2 years left on his deal worth $10 million were not the reason, but that he thought he saw some progress with the team this year. We're hearing just the opposite, that Weaver actually had 10 million reasons to make sure that Del Rio was still here. Now, they did not extend the assistant coaches, so they're going to be working on one-year deals, but it is interesting, and it sounds like it was about money.
Well, not only that, Arthur, but one of those lame duck coaches. We understand defensive coordinator Mel Tucker has been put in charge of the defensive play calling now. That on the heels of last year, GM Gene Smith giving full personnel power over the roster. It's almost as if you've got Del Rio standing there with his job, but no authority.
Yeah, that's exactly right. As you mentioned, last year it was the personnel decisions being given completely to Gene Smith. This year, Mel Tucker will be running the defense. Now, Weaver said that he wanted Del Rio to be able to take a step back and kind of have a more overall view of the game and be able to make adjustments and not focus on just the defense. So Gene Smith is very high on Mel Tucker. He ran a 3-4 in Cleveland. They still, of course, have a 4-3 in Jacksonville, but we're going to find out if he is one of those up-and-coming guys.
All right. Thanks very much, Arthur. We'll be back with more Way We Hear It when this postseason edition of Pro Football Weekly continues. You are listening to Pro Football Weekly on a wild card weekend in the NFL. The Way We Hear It features the publisher and editor of Pro Football Weekly, Hub Arkush, and the Pro Football Weekly staff. And on that staff is associate editor Dan Parr, who joins us in the studio now. And Dan, coaching openings. You've got two of them on your teams. Let's begin at Carolina, where the Panthers' head coaching search goes on. Now, I know that everybody's kind of shooting at Jim Harbaugh's best-case scenario, but they're looking at a tier of candidates maybe just below that level in terms of profile, right?
That's right, Wayne. They're staying out of the Harbaugh sweepstakes. Their focus is on four defensive coordinators right now. It's Rob Ryan from the Browns, Greg Minuski from the 49ers, Perry Fuel of the Giants, and Ron Rivera from the Chargers. They're looking at those four guys, and the choice they end up with could come from that group.
Well, and it's really interesting, you know, if you think about it, Dan, that you look at Jerry Richardson, the owner's theory on this. I mean, he's built the organization. I believe the only two coaches he's ever had were Dom Capers and John Fox, both defensive coordinators, who both had some success with the organization. And now you look at Ron Rivera, who got to a Super Bowl with the Bears. The Chargers have played well under him, not this year, but last year. Perry Fuel, even though just 1 year with the Giants, again, he was with that Bears Super Bowl team. The Giants are 10-6 team. He obviously believes that the defensive side is where you want to win and where you want your head coach to come from.
Yeah, he does like the model that he's seen in some of the other teams in the postseason right now, whether it's the Falcons with Mike Smith, defensive coordinator, the Steelers, former defensive coordinator Mike Tomlin. He wants a guy who can come in and build a strong defense. You're going to have to be going against teams in the division like the Buccaneers, the Saints, the Falcons with very good quarterbacks with good years ahead of them. You're going to have to slow some of these guys down, and they need a crafty defensive coordinator to come in and have a plan in place to kind of limit those guys.
Out in Oakland, the Raiders are also looking for a head coach, and that head coach may be on the staff. Is that true?
That's right. It looks like Hugh Jackson is the front runner there. Al Davis has said that no decision has been – well, Al Davis hasn't said, but the Raiders have said that no decision has been made and there's been no interview scheduled. But they have told Hugh Jackson to be prepared for an interview, so one could be coming any day now. Hugh Jackson did interview with the 49ers, but it doesn't look like he is a top candidate there. They're going after Jim Harbaugh. And if that doesn't work out, there are reports saying Josh McDaniels could be the plan B there.
Yeah, Al Davis has a track record. He never moves quickly on hiring these coaches. But you look at the relationship with Jackson. This is a guy who was in Baltimore and actually had a chance to interview for the Bears offensive coordinator job, but didn't even want to interview because he wanted to go work for Al Davis. Now, some people, you know, question the stability of the Raider organization, but Jackson's obviously a guy who's fairly comfortable with it, Dan.
He did a nice job this year, definitely moving this offense in a direction that Tom Cable was unable to do when he served as the offensive coordinator in the year prior. There was rumored to be some friction between him and Cable for most of the season. Cable wasn't a fan of him coming in. Maybe he had an idea of what was coming down the line here and the situation he maybe envisioned is playing itself out.
Well, Wayne, the other thing you got to keep in mind with this particular situation is Al Davis went and got Jason Campbell to be his Jimmy Plunkett. Tom Cable, for reasons that escape me, decided to cast his lot with Bruce Gradkowski. Gradkowski kept getting hurt. Campbell came in and won games. I would bet anything that Hugh Jackson is telling Al Davis that Jason Campbell's his guy.
I would think so, yes. Thank you very much, Dan. We appreciate it. Senior editor Eric Edholm also with us in studio. Minnesota Vikings take the interim tag off of Les Frazier, make him the full-time head coach. How about some tweaks on that staff?
Yeah, I mean, he's already made some big moves. I mean, they've been impressed with the stability of Leslie Frazier through all the roof collapsing in the Metrodome and just sort of the calm that he brought to the table as coach. But it's interesting. He's already started to shake things up a little bit. Quarterback coach Kevin Rogers is gone. Offensive line Pat Morris is gone. These are guys who were on Childress' staff when Frazier was the defensive coordinator. But a bigger move actually could be coming down the line. Darrell Bevell remains on the staff. He's the offensive coordinator for now. It appears that he may end up being the quarterback. Back coach. I don't know if he and Frazier didn't exactly see eye to eye or if there's some questions about how he ran the offense this past year, but it appears they're probably going to be poised to go in a different direction with the offensive coordinator position.
Well, and I thought the other interesting thing to come out of the first head coaching interview of Les Frazier, Eric, is what are the chances that he's got his speed dial all lined up or that he'll be chartering any jets for Hattiesburg, Mississippi?
Yeah, not very good. And it was interesting the way he answered. He said, I can't envision a situation where I would be getting Brett on the phone in June. And so what he wants to avoid is this whole off-season long circus where, you know, there's the speculation of whether Favre is going to come in and rescue this team. They're clearly going to move swiftly in another direction at that position. You know, does it include Joe Webb, who kind of moonlighted as a quarterback this year, made a couple of nice moments, but really looked like he had a long way to go? Probably not. They want to either bring in a veteran or possibly a first-round draft pick. You know, they're picking with that 12th spot. A number of guys could be available. You could see him go both routes. Get the veteran, who's the temporary guy, and then the long-term solution with the first-rounder.
All right. Senior editor Eric Edholm, thank you very much, Eric. Stay tuned. We've got more news and notes from around the NFL on this first weekend of the playoffs next on Pro Football Weekly. This is Wayne Larrabee with Hub Arkush. Playoff weekend in the NFL, and we continue with the way we hear it. On this wild card weekend, we continue with senior editor Eric Edholm. Eric, another one of your teams. Where do you begin with the Washington Redskins offseason? You got the McNabb issue. You've got the Haynesworth issue. What is Shanahan doing? What's he addressing first?
Well, people ask him about both guys, and I think the divorce with McNabb probably will be a little easier. They've kind of gotten the bad stuff out of the way. You know, Albert Haynesworth came into the facility on Monday following, you know, his exit interview or essentially his physical to see, you know, basically so he can collect a check, you know, his final one probably from the Redskins. But he came in, didn't go see Shanahan. Shanahan was hoping he would stop by. Instead, he decided to wear a shirt with the letters with the word punk on it. Now, people read this in different ways. So maybe he's the punk or maybe he's suggesting the head coach is the punk. But either way, it's not going to end well. He's going to be a former Redskin at some point this offseason. The question now is, you know, what can you get for him? Who's interested in trading for him? And really, that applies to McNabb, too.
Well, and we know one team that will probably peek in is the Tennessee Titans. And hey, guys, how about an Albert Haynesworth for Vince Young trade? I mean, you know, Shanahan, you know, thinks he's the guru of quarterback coaches. We know Young's got to move. We know the Titans were prepared to give, we believe the Titans were prepared to give the Redskins a fourth round pick earlier this year before the trade deadline. I'm just speculating here, but maybe that's something we ought to keep an eye on.
Well, I don't think conditioning is the issue with Vince Young. We've seen him run around quite well in the NFL. The question is whether he could master that offense. But yeah, I mean, stranger things have happened. The Redskins are going to be in the market for a quarterback, probably both a present and a future quarterback. Same kind of situation we talked about with the Vikings. But, you know, it's really foggy right now what they're going to do at that position and what they're going to do with the rest of the offense. It can work if they get the right pieces.
Meanwhile, in Detroit, Lions rookie defensive tackle Ndamukong Suh, who had a sensational rookie year, named to the Pro Bowl as a starter, apparently shoulder surgery will take him out. Is that a bit of a surprise that he decided to have the surgery this soon?
I don't think so. I think it's one of those procedural things, Wayne, where they just wanted to clean it up and make sure there were no issues heading into the offseason. And, you know, Sue, like you said, had a terrific performance as a rookie. You don't see defensive tackles make that position as in their first seasons to the Pro Bowl. I mean, it's pretty impressive what he did, even given the expectations he came in with. But it sounds like this is just sort of a routine thing. He played through a little bit of an injury, going to clean it up, and hopefully he'll be ready to go in 2011.
Here is what's intriguing about it, though, Eric. When you talk about leadership and maturity and getting what it takes, a lot of people believe that the Vikings' young but veteran Pro Bowl receiver, Sidney Rice, had he had his hip surgery in March instead of August, the whole Viking season could have been different. But he didn't. He didn't get it. He didn't understand it. This kid, Sue, appears to be about as good as they come, both on the field and off the field.
You know, some people have said he's a bit of a diva in that he sort of loves the spotlight and all that stuff, but there's no question how serious he is about football. The coaches have said, we don't want to hold him back in any way because we know he's mature, he gets it, and he wants to win. Whereas the situation in Minnesota, you know, might have been a contract deal there, might have been some other distractions involved with his agent, so there don't appear to be any distractions whatsoever with Ndamukong Suh.
Eric, thank you very much. We'll talk to you again next week. Executive Editor Dan Arkish is with us. Dan, down in Arizona, major changes for the Cardinals at quarterback and linebacker. Can you give us an update?
Well, Wayne, obviously they're going to go hard after a quarterback. What we're speculating is that they're going to flood the position. They're going to go after a known name, either via free agency or trade, and then probably draft a quarterback pretty high. So that is definitely the major thrust, but linebacker isn't too far behind. It's very possible that only one of the four linebackers who began the year as a starter, and that would be a free agent addition, Paris Lennon, he might be the only one back. Joey Porter was a big disappointment, and his salary jumps way up to $5.7 million. Him and Clark Hagans are over 30. Gerald Hayes is washed up, so look for a major change in linebacker.
Dan, let me go back to the quarterback position for a minute, because all of our sources, it's not like Ken Wisenhunt and Rod Graves are holding press conferences and saying, we don't want Donovan McNabb, but everything we hear is that the Eagles have denied interest in McNabb when a lot of people speculated it would be the perfect landing spot for him with a home out there and a coach who gets his ability. But why is it that they appear to not have any interest in McNabb?
It's a pretty good question, Hub, but our sources out there have maintained that they just don't have an interest in him and just don't think that he is a fit. I mean, Wisenhunt is very familiar with him, and he just likes other guys better, and McNabb has just consistently been ruled out from the insiders that we talk to.
One other quick question. Russ Grimm has been a hot head coaching candidate the last couple of years, a Super Bowl trip, second round of the playoffs last year. We're not hearing his name as much now. Has this horrible year done some damage to his resume as well?
I don't think so. I think that he still could be a serious candidate in Carolina, and he's still very highly regarded. What he brings to the table is a lot more than just coaching. So I think he's still out there, you know, as a possibility in whatever, you know, shakes on the carousel.
All right, Dan, thank you very much. We'll be back. Wild Card Weekend continues on this postseason edition of Pro Football Weekly after these messages. Welcome back to Pro Football Weekly, along with the publisher and editor, Hub Arkish. I'm Wayne Larrabee. The Saturday wild card games of the NFL this weekend, the world champion New Orleans Saints begin their postseason trek to defend their title at Seattle, where they face the first under 500 division winner in NFL history. Our story is provided by Gus Kattengill.
Seattle is 7-9, and the Saints are 11-5. Yet it's New Orleans that will begin its defense of a Super Bowl championship on the road. As if facing the famed 12th man isn't tough enough, the injury bug has been hungry at Saints camp. In back-to-back days this week, running back Chris Ivory, the team's leading rusher, and running back Pierre Thomas were placed on injured reserve, bringing an end to their seasons. Saints quarterback Drew Brees.
Don't make it any easier. Certainly we're going to miss Chris Ivory and Pierre Thomas. You know, in the end, you just work to the strengths of the guys that you have. You don't worry about what you don't have. You worry about who you do have.
One of those backs that'll need to pick up the slack? Reggie Bush.
I'm looking forward to it, and, you know, just take it one game at a time. The running back position is just one small piece of the puzzle.
Bush, who had 5 carries for 84 yards in the Saints' first playoff game against Arizona a season ago, isn't lacking confidence.
I'm definitely going to be expecting, you know, a lot. Definitely have high expectations for myself, you know, in this postseason.
Now, there were a few themes in the Saints' locker room this week, such as not overlooking Seattle, as Saints defensive end Alex Brown explains.
We can't worry about their record or how easy the game's going to be. This game's not going to be easy at all. You got to come in ready to play regardless of who you're playing. We're playing at their field. We're playing in their weather. Us losing guys, us being distracted by that, the long flight. We got to make sure we go in and play football. And if we do that, we'll be fine.
Another is taking care of the football. Drew Brees has 22 interceptions this season.
It's always the challenge. Staying aggressive, but also understanding how important the turnover ratio is, especially in the playoffs. Our identity is very much an aggressive one. You know, we're going to take our shots in the pass game, run game, but you just understand what wins and loses football games, and certainly the turnover ratio is a huge part of that.
And finally, setting the tone early defensively in order to get that Seattle crowd out of the game. Saints safety Roman Harper.
We want to get turnovers, we want to score on defense, and any opportunity that we can get the offense, the ball back, we got to go out here and establish ourselves defensively early, try and take the crowd out of it and get it going fast.
It's the Saints and Seahawks kicking off the 2010 NFL postseason in New Orleans. Gus Kattengell for Pro Football Weekly.
You know, Wayne, it's interesting, this running back thing with the Saints. Clearly, they're a better team. But you look at most of Drew Brees' picks. They came after both Pierre Thomas and Reggie Bush went down. Now, Chris Ivory did a nice job. But once he started to get him back, first Bush, then Thomas, he settled down a little bit again. Julius Jones is the guy to keep an eye on. He's the fourth back. But Reggie Bush has never been a feature back in his career. And I don't think he's going to be this weekend. I think you got to keep an eye on Julius Jones. And Drew Brees cannot afford to throw any interceptions.
It's interesting. Saints have never won a road playoff game, so they have an opportunity to get that monkey off their back. Brees scorched the Seahawks. 4 touchdowns, 382 yards in the Week 11 win by New Orleans, 34-19. And the Saints in that game converted 11 of 15 third downs in the win over the Hawks. Matt Hasselbeck, his season-high 366 yards in that Week 11 game against the Saints. How do you think this could be a shootout?
Well, I don't think that Seattle is capable of really a shootout against the Saints' defense. So you got to hope for the Saints' sake that they can get enough offense and that the defense pulls them through. Look for that defense to take the ball away a few times.
Meanwhile, in a rematch of last year's AFC title game, the Indianapolis Colts play host to the New York Jets on a wild card weekend feature game. Bart Pasterna has more.
The road to the playoffs often doesn't look like the map contenders are given prior to the start of the season. All the hazards and detours don't necessarily show up on paper. But along the way, the Jets and Colts acquired some GPS units, so here they be for all to see on a Saturday night in Indy. Colts quarterback Peyton Manning has guided his troops over rough terrain before, but perhaps with never-so-ever-thinning offensive weapons at his disposal. This season, the future Hall of Famer needed a 4-game winning streak, some help from his D, and a little luck to capture a division and a postseason birth.
We don't take it for granted to be in the playoffs. I feel very fortunate, and I feel like these last 4 games have really been like playoff games for us. And for the most part, had we lost any of those 4, we probably would have been out of contention. So we have been playing with a sense of urgency, and we'll need to continue that.
Against the team he solved in last year's AFC Championship game, that would be Coach Rex Ryan's wild card Jets.
I'm not the only coordinator, the only guy that Peyton's ever destroyed. You know what I mean? And I think it's written like, you know, oh, I'm his punching bag or something. But mine's at least got some arms on it. But I plan on swinging back.
And maybe this time Rex's Jets do it offensively. Unlike last year when New York's vaunted ground game was led by a banged-up Thomas Jones and a soon-to-be-banged-up Sean Green, the new dynamic duo of Green and LaDainian Tomlinson is well-rested, healthy, and ranked 4th in the NFL. Oh, but the Colts' regular season-ending 4-game winning streak was punctuated by a resilient run defense, one that shut down big names and big games. If Indy can sustain that level of turf toughness, it will put added pressure on sore-armed Jets quarterback Mark Sanchez. Colts defensive end Dwight Freeney will be in pursuit.
Sanchez is definitely has the ability to be dangerous. I mean, definitely with his feet. I think they like to get him outside the pocket a little bit, you know, use his mobility as a strength. So do a little bit, some boots, things of that nature.
But Dwight knows it may not mean a thing if Sanchez ain't got that zing on his throws. Hey, don't forget to throw in the X Factor. Dome-de-dome-dome. For Pro Football Weekly, I'm Bart Pasterna.
Thank you very much, Bart. Coming up, a look at the Sunday wild card games. You are listening to a postseason edition of Pro Football Weekly. You are listening to Pro Football Weekly, and it's Wild Card Weekend in the NFL. And let's start with the Sunday games and the early game in Kansas City. The Baltimore Ravens begin their postseason in KC, where one of the most pleasant surprises of the campaign resides, the AFC West Division champion Kansas City Chiefs. We get the preview of this game through the eyes of Craig Heist.
It's the Ravens and Chiefs from Arrowhead on Wild Card Weekend. For the Ravens, their third straight trip to the playoffs. In fact, they've played five of their last six postseason games on the road. And linebacker Ray Lewis says, that's fine, let's go get the prize.
We have that opportunity now. We're back in the dance in the third year. You know, some people say three is a charm. I say let three stay charm. I say finish. Because we done everything else. We done been to the AFC Championship. We done been in divisional rounds. We done everything we're supposed to do. What's next for us? The next step for us is finished.
Lewis leads a defense that isn't as good as in years past, but they rank third in the NFL in points allowed with 270 and were fifth against the rush, giving up 93.9 yards a game. But Haloti Ngata and company are facing the number one rushing offense in the league, led by the second-ranked rusher in the league in Jamal Charles.
We love when teams like to run, and if we can take away their best thing, then that's an advantage for us. And so, you know, like I said earlier, we're hopefully we can do that, and you know, we can get to Castle instead of worrying about the run more.
The Chiefs' offense is one of the most productive around. They average nearly 350 yards a game, but they won just three of their last five games and scored 10 points or less three times. And they are coming off a 31-10 beatdown by Oakland at home last week. Nonetheless, Ravens coach John Harbaugh knows what he's up against.
A veteran offensive line, especially the inside guys, two backs that can take it to the house at any time, a receiver that's got 15 touchdowns, a quarterback that, you know, obviously is a veteran guy now, so it's a really good team.
The Ravens beat the Chiefs 38-24 last season as Joe Flacco threw three touchdown passes and Ray Rice ran for 108 yards. They won 20-10 in their only visit to Kansas City in 2006. Yet three straight years to the postseason and coming up short doesn't sit well with the quarterback.
I think we're getting spoiled around here thinking that this is an every year occurrence, and, you know, so far it has been, but I think when it comes to that, being in the playoffs the last couple of years and, you know, losing playoff games and, you know, kind of feeling what that feels like, it's going to help us out.
Craig Heist for Pro Football Weekly.
You know, Wayne, for the Ravens, I really think this thing starts, it doesn't necessarily end, but it certainly starts with Joe Flacco. This is a young quarterback who's done pretty much everything you'd want a kid to do in his first three seasons. The 93.6 quarterback rating, very impressive. The 25 touchdowns versus 10 picks is a nice ratio. But a couple times with a chance to put his signature on key wins, he's been unable to do it. And I go back specifically to that second Steeler game where he was a short fourth down toss from getting a win in that game. He turfed the ball. They lost the game, and that's why they're playing this weekend instead of next.
You know, when you look at Baltimore, and Craig Heist mentioned it, Hub, not quite what they were defensively in let's say, 4 or 5 years ago, but this is still a real formidable group, and especially matching up strength and strength. What the Ravens do really well is stop the run. They're fifth overall, as Craig mentioned. Kansas City runs the football well. They're the first, they're number one in the league in rushing yards per game on the ground. It should be interesting to see how that matchup goes.
And it's amazing that Ray Lewis is playing at the level that he is at the age of 35, but he is no longer the best defensive player on that defense. That's Haloti Ngata, you know, and he's playing outside on the end. Sometimes he comes inside on tackle, but he is an absolute two and three, you know, double or triple team type guy. He's a gap stuffer, and he makes tackles. He doesn't just fill gaps, but he is stopping people. And so I think you're absolutely right. I mean, the chance for the Chiefs in this game is either Charles or Jones or both have got to have a big game running the football. The other interesting note here is Charlie Weiss moving on. You know, 1 year in Kansas City, clearly turned this offense around. He's headed to Florida. Is it a distraction? Are the rumors true that he and Todd Haley didn't get along all that well? I can't imagine it being a distraction in this first playoff game in Kansas City in a while, but it's part of the story.
Bottom line, Hub, are the Chiefs, this young Chiefs squad, ready to win a playoff game?
You know, I think the guy who might be is Matt Castle. It's interesting that I don't know why. I trust Castle more than I trust Flacco. They're both young quarterbacks. Of course, Castle's been around a lot longer, but hasn't played any longer. They're both basically in their third years as starters. And look at Dwayne Bowe. You know, Anquan Boldin had eight catches in their last four games, and here's a Pro Bowl receiver. Dwayne Bowe is the receiver who's dominating and making the big plays right now.
It'll be an interesting ball game. Baltimore and Kansas City, the Sunday wild card in the AFC, the Sunday afternoon headliner of Wild Card Weekend, and the Handicapper's Corner are up next when Pro Football Weekly continues. ¶¶ The Headliner is an in-depth look at the top attraction on this weekend's NFL card. Well, wild card weekend, the capper, the Green Bay Packers take on the Philadelphia Eagles in a rematch of an opening weekend battle between the two rivals, with postseason history between them as well. I mean, there's a lot to this game, and the NFL has put it into its final window on this opening playoff weekend. Our headliner on this wild card weekend, detailed by Donna McQuillan.
The season starts today.
That's Eagles quarterback Michael Vick.
The season starts now. I'm very excited, very enthused. I know all the guys in the locker room are ready.
And so the postseason begins the same way the regular season started, against the Packers at the Link.
They're a good football team, and I'm sure they'll have a good plan, and we'll try to come up with something to see if we can't compete with them.
Safety Quentin Michael remembers that 27-20 loss all too well.
We did some things on defense and offense that was very good, but we also did some things that were bad. At the end of it all, we lost the game. So this is a team coming to here that won on our home turf. You know, they beat us. You know, we got to look at it as a revenge game.
The first meeting of these two teams was the game where Kevin Cobb was knocked out of action by Green Bay linebacker Clay Matthews. Cobb was out with a concussion, so it was Michael Vick who stepped up and took over the quarterbacking reins, starting the saga of Vick's rebirth despite the defeat.
It's great to get another shot at them. Obviously, they're playing good football right now. They have a lot of momentum, which is good. It's going to be a great, great thing to play them in the playoffs. And, you know, you want to play the best. You want to play the tough teams, and you want to go out there and you want to put on your best performances, and this is when everybody has to come to perform.
You know, our thing is that, and I think it's Michael's primary thing, is just to execute the offense, give his guys an opportunity to make plays around them. If that's not there, then he's going to make something happen.
The Eagles and Packers are, according to Reed, similar in base makeup to those two squads that faced off that September afternoon.
Both sides have had just a number of injuries, but schematically, I think it is. I think we're similar to what we did there. They're similar to what they're doing now and on both sides of the ball, and so you just got some different people in places there. Will they dig up some new stuff? Yeah. Will we dig up some new stuff? Yeah.
Vick will again lead the offensive charge.
They're going to come after you. They're going to try to get you rattled, get you off your square, but, you know, that's football.
And that means the Eagles have to keep cornerback Charles Woodson and linebacker Matthews from being defensive factors, while the Packers quarterback Aaron Rodgers can't be allowed to show up the Philly defensive unit. I'm Donald McQuillan reporting for Pro Football Weekly.
You know, Wayne, I think the fascinating matchup here has to start with the quarterbacks, because all the talk all year long has been Mike Vick, but these are two prototypical West Coast offenses. Aaron Rodgers is almost as dangerous running the football as Vick is. Not the speed or the huge plays, but you're still talking about averaging over 5 yards a carry, running for 4 touchdowns, and I think Rodgers much more capable of executing the passing game.
Yeah, I don't think there's any question about it, though. I will say this about Michael Vick. He is a much different quarterback. He's a more complete quarterback. He processes information a whole lot better than back in 2002 when Vick led Atlanta into Green Bay and scored the first postseason victory by any opponent over the Packers on Wisconsin soil ever. But he's a much different player now. I think he's a much more complete player. And he's also a little banged up, Hub. You saw him late in the season, and he's not quite the player he was at midseason.
Now, he got hurt on the second play of the game against the Vikings, the ill-fated Tuesday night game, and he played through that game. I talked to him on the field afterwards, and he indicated he was a little surprised that Andy Reid left him in for the whole game. He wasn't going to ask out. He got through it. He should be okay physically. To me, the big difference in this game, Wayne, as I look at this Philadelphia Eagle team right now, I don't think they're good enough on the offensive or defensive lines to play with the Packers. That's where I think the Packers have a big advantage up front on both sides of the ball. Mike Vick's been sacked quite a bit this year. You think about him as an escapable quarterback, but to me, that's where the Packers have a big advantage.
The one thing about a running quarterback, they take a lot of hits. Even those great runs Michael Vick makes, most of them end with a hit on Michael Vick. And that's our headliner in the wild card weekend playoffs, the Packers at the Eagles. Now time for the Handicapper's Corner, featuring race and sports book executive Chuck Esposito of the Phoenician in Las Vegas.
Hey, Chuck, we got to start you out with this Seahawks-Saints game. I just... You know, and I know for some of our listeners it's past now, but the bottom line, I've never seen a 10-11 point dog at home in the playoffs, or at least not in the last decade or so. How difficult was it to come up with that line?
It's tough. This is actually the largest road favorite, I believe, in the history of the playoffs. I think in 2000, you actually had the Rams go into New Orleans, and they were a 6.5 point favorite, and they got beat outright. But to see a double-digit favorite on the road in the playoffs is unheard of. Seattle did win that game. They finished 7-9. They're playing a beat-up Saints team who at running back, they're pretty much signing guys off the scrap heap. But they are a huge favorite in Seattle. Very difficult from our end to put up a number. But it's double digits, and it really hasn't moved since we put it up. So I think the betting public is a little confused as well.
Well, and the other thing from the handicapping perspective, and again, I realize depending on when folks are listening to the show, the game could be in the books right now. But going in, as you tried to get a number, nobody knew if it was Matt Hasselbeck or Charlie Whitehurst, and we assumed it was Matt Hasselbeck, but Hasselbeck had the kind of year with 12 touchdowns, 17 picks. Did it really even matter all that much?
Very true, very true. And we still don't know for sure in this game who it's going to be, but Hasselbeck's been beat up. I mean, Whitehurst did have a couple of big plays in that game, but effective as far as moving the team down the field, major question marks there. And Seattle ranked 31st as far as rushing offense goes. How are they going to keep up with Seattle, I think, is the big question. Total has dropped. Point spread has pretty much stayed the same at double digits.
Chuck, real quickly before I let you go, we'll talk more about this next week. We know that there's usually about a three-point home field advantage. Will these four winners this weekend be docked another half a point or a point because they've got teams that have been resting?
It depends how they look in this week. That could be the case, but you look at these teams, and I think the wild card teams this year, more than any other outside of Seattle, have a great shot to win it all and make some noise in the playoffs. So I think as we move forward, there's going to be some great games with these teams involved.
Thanks very much, Chuck. Chuck Esposito of the Phoenician in Las Vegas. The Publisher's Pen is next on Pro Football Weekly. The Publisher's Pen with the publisher and editor of Pro Football Weekly, Hub Arkush. Hub?
Well, Wayne, now that it's here, it's worth talking about what has been one of the great debates this season. We haven't heard it that much in the past, but then we've never had a 7-9 team in the playoffs before. And should the NFL revisit its playoff qualification rules? Should division champions automatically qualify? Well, I believe, and all of us at Pro Football Weekly believe, the answer to that is yes. Division play does have to matter. This is an aberration. It's never happened before. It may never happen again, but so what? Seattle 7-9, they won their division. They earned a playoff spot. However, does the league need to look at the seeding of these teams? I think the answer to that is absolutely yes. It is just not right for the New Orleans Saints to win 11 football games and go on the road and play a team that only won 7. Now, give them their playoff spot for winning the division, but then as the season ends, reseed these teams according to tiebreakers, get them 1-6, and reward them for the quality of play. Clearly, succeeding in the NFC South was a lot more difficult than it was in the NFC West this year. Doesn't matter what the outcome of the game is. That's not the point. The point is the Saints are being penalized for being a much better team this year, Wayne, than the Seattle Seahawks.
It's well put, Hub. I agree with you wholeheartedly. That'll do it for Pro Football Weekly this week. Special thanks to the Steelers, Falcons, and Giants radio networks. Randy Meyer is our producer-engineer. Pro Football Weekly originates from the studios of Syndication Networks in Chicago, Illinois. Now for Hub Arkush and the Pro Football Weekly staff, this is Wayne Larrabee. Thanks for listening. We'll catch you next week with our divisional playoff edition of Pro Football Weekly.